Should go. And I see what's inside of you like you reversible. So, baby girl, look, I don't wanna stop it, cause we a perfect mixture, white chocolate.
Yeah, I started out in corporate life, and then I started in recession hit, and then I started into modeling at 34. So I started late, which you're not supposed to do, etc. But it's been very successful, and it wasn't something I planned on doing. I just kind of fell into it.
Oh wow, that's completely amazing. And I see you're very fit. and you have, but this is because you have an extensive background as well as in fitness as well.
I do, yes.
Such as,
and again, I didn't plan on that. I spent from 16 to about 16 to, well, 10 years ago, I quit smoking, a little over 10 years ago, and couldn't handle myself because I was so grumpy. So I joined a gym, and then from there, I fell into being a personal trainer, and I was already modeling. So all of a sudden, I looked into the fitness modeling side of things, and then the competition side of things. So the bodybuilding just kept going from there as well. So again, not something I planned on doing, but fell into it and enjoyed it and was successful with it. So.
It seems like the world, and as I always would say, that it just seems to, I wouldn't say collide, but I would say that it kind of goes hand in hand, you know.
Acting, modeling, fitness modeling, singing, they do go hand in hand because nowadays you can't rely on just one genre or one thing to keep you going. Back in the day, people would have a career and then they'd keep going and then they would retire and life was good. But now people go through 5-10 careers in their life, so you never know. And not everything is stable nowadays, so it's better to have a few different qualities and career choices than just one.
Well, I certainly agree. Ms. Milton, it's you know, it's quite a benefit to add, as I always would say, to many who look at it as a career. And if it's a career, you know, those elements come together in a sense.
But I decided to fall into the hardest careers that there is. Not that any career is easy, but acting and modeling are one of the hardest careers internationally, worldwide, that you can get into and be successful in. So I guess I just like to take the hard road. I don't know.
Now you also have, you know, have a background. I would even assume that, you know, looking at you, you know, seeing what you have done, your portfolio, that you've also probably have done some stunt work as well.
Yes, I have actually. And I could say I could make a really corny joke and say I fell into that as well.
Quite good. Quite good joke. yes, we can certainly say, we can certainly add that. So, you know, what would be the toughest element to your background that you've ever done, that you would say? Would it be, in your terms, would it be, you know, the acting? Would it be the stunt work? Would it be the modeling?
For me, the acting is the toughest because of where I live geographically wise. Modeling, because I'm part Native and I have a unique look, most people guess that I'm Italian or Greek. And here where I live in Alberta, Canada, we do what's called period pieces. So we do things that are 1800s, 1900s, westerns, etc. So they want to place people that look definitely, okay, you're definitely Asian, you're definitely white, you're definitely black. And a lot of the period pieces, there isn't mixed race children yet. There isn't people who are part Native and part white. That came later on. The French and the Natives interbred later on. So if they're doing pieces where there's cowboys and Indians, basically, I don't fit into that. I'm not Native enough looking, and I'm not Caucasian enough looking. And then on top of it, they generally want to place you for your age group. I'm 45 in 2020, April of next year. Well, this year coming up, I'm 45, but I don't look it.
No.
So I get sent for things that are more 25 to 35 years old. So my age is correct for playing somebody's mom, but if you look at me, how many bodybuilding, fit, young-looking moms are out there? Not saying there isn't, but
me.
It's everybody's typical idea of what a mom would look like. So acting, unless I go internationally, which there's a lot of red tape that way too, and working visas, etc. I won't bore you with that. But back to your question and my long-winded answer, acting is the hardest, I find.
That's quite interesting, you know. But we can, there is, you know, ways to look into the reasons and possibilities of why. Certainly, we could look at the traveling and the dedication and the time, the timing, the time well spent, you know, in creating the character and getting into the character and kind of knowing who they are and how to emulate that character in a sense and become them, and then being able to break out of that character when needed. Those are very hard and strenuous areas to kind of go in and out of, in a sense.
An industry is about who you know, not what you know, and anybody that says differently is not telling the truth. Of course, yes, the more experience, the better, and the better actor you are, the further you can get ahead. I'm not saying that, but there's actors out there who aren't as good as other actors, and they've gone a lot further, because it truly is who you know in the industry, who are your connections, makes a huge difference as well. It's not all about the craft.
Well, I certainly, you know, we can certainly agree to that, Miss Middleton. We can certainly agree to that, you know, in any aspects. Of course, you know, I would like to thank you for accepting the role, in my film that's coming up, Monster for Somali. I can't wait to work with you. you just have...
Well, thanks for asking me. And I'm excited because, again, I'm going to play the part of a Greek, which I think is really neat. And it's true. Even my own family says I look more Italian or Greek. There's more to do with the craft too. Sometimes it's your look more than anything as well. And what the other person, you could think that you match the look and the idea and the role completely, but if that's not the other person, if you don't fit the other person's vision, then it's not going to work either.
Wow.
So it all depends on vision as well, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, if I may ask, your background, your ethnicity, if I may, Ms. Milton.
Yes, I'm Caucasian, French, and Native American as well.
Oh, Native
American Indian.
Sure.
And a bit of Scottish and a bit of Irish are in there as well.
Wow. Now, I could see the Irish for some reason. I just could see that. Dark Irish.
And that's funny because if you were to break it down into percentages, it would be French and Native. That would be the largest percentage of my identity.
Amazing. Wow. It's just we come from such a melting pot in society, so. It's such a grand scale. We're not just one particular identity. There's multiple,
And now things are changing where it depends what you want to identify as well. So there's more layers happening with people changing and and the world changing, not people are identifying differently as what they were born as. So truly you can identify as whatever you want to identify as. I like to identify as a kind, loving, strong, intelligent human.
In this I do agree. Absolutely.
I think it would be nice if we got past the whole black, white, gray, etc. But we're getting there, two steps back, two steps forward, one step forward, three steps back. We're getting there as a world, and I mean, it's different depending where you live too. Canada's different than the U.S., and Europe's different again, so it really depends where you live as well, what people think and how they feel and how open they are or how closed-minded they are as well, but we're getting there. I'm cautiously optimistic that the world's changing for the better, hopefully.
It is a gradual process, to a certain degree, as society does unfold and change, decade after decade, century after century, and it's progression to where it's going. We can only guess.
Things are so ever changing. I have no idea. And I mean, we're not the future. It's the young generation's the future. So it's in their hands right now and on their shoulders. So as they become adults and change the world, that's when we'll see what's happening.
Yes, which is it's a wonderful happening. But I certainly do. I'm a believer in gradually taking days and moments, every step of the way gradually, and just taking it and enjoying the moments. We kind of forget
exactly.
We have live in such a fast-paced society. At least, in America, we live in such a fast-paced society where everything's go, go, go.
Everything happens fast. We're a little luckier here in Canada. We're slower paced. Don't happen quite as fast. So, compared to, say, New York, where you can't keep up, the city that never sleeps. We actually sleep here in Canada.
I should move back to Canada. as I would say, indeed, because it's such a wonderful aspect. Because unless you're in certain parts
that can travel anywhere, and everyone in the world likes Canadians generally, so that's a good thing.
We're just such wonderful people, wonderful people, a very warm and inviting, and who would want to lose that in general company,
That's true, yes. Which I've managed to keep, even though I'm in the industry I'm in, because people always see it from the outside looking in, and they don't realize what comes with being a celebrity or being successful. Nobody sees the hard work. Nobody sees how strong you have to be, and nobody sees the nitty gritty. Nobody sees the people that kick you down. Nobody sees the scam artist that you have to deal with. So nobody sees the dark side of things. So it could be it takes a certain personality type to be in the industries that I'm in, because they're not easy industries, and it would be easy to be jaded and be cutthroat and be a scammer and not be a friendly, nice person, and to walk around distrusting everyone. So you got to keep that in mind too. So I don't but I was raised by my grandparents, so I think that helps too, because they instilled a lot of the old-fashioned values. So I tend to, if I get kicked down, I just brush myself up and off and get back up again, because that's just the way it is. The world doesn't stop just because you got kicked, and it doesn't mean everyone's going to kick you just because one person did.
Exactly.
I spent over 25 years in the corporate world, in the world of business, so there's not a huge difference when you look at it that way. You're correct. It's all a business.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, a casting call or an audition is basically an interview, you know. And you're just getting ready to put on a character, in a sense. But
exactly.
Yourself and betraying this different person that has a different side of humanity.
But you're always going to have to realize you're always going to be too tall, too short, too fat, not fat enough, too brown, not brown enough, too brunette, not brunette enough. you just have to, as soon as you realize not to take it personally, it makes life so much easier, and not to sit there and think, well, what could I have done better? Well, you don't know. I mean, you don't have a lot of details when you go on into an audition. So it really depends what the designer's thinking or what the casting director's thinking, whether you're modeling or acting. It's their vision, and you'll never completely know why you didn't get something. So if you sit there and kick yourself for it and sit there and wonder, well, what was it? It's always good to evaluate a certain amount and think, what could I do better? Because nobody's perfect. But if you start kicking yourself for it, that's where the spiral turns. And that's why a lot of people spiral and end up out of the industry after the first year or two, because they just can't handle it. There's a lot of rejection that happens on a daily when it comes to the modeling and acting world. It's just the way it is.
It's a quite a hit or miss. It's sort of like going out for, you know, a regular job. You know, you're going to be able to handle what kind of observation the employer is going to take of your background.
Yeah, because you could look great on paper and you're like, I'm going to get this. I have everything they want. I got the experience. I'm going to ace this. Well, how many other people have the exact same qualifications that are going in for the exact same interview? So you can't take it personally. You just do your best and you learn from it however you can and move onward and upward with it.
Certainly agree, and a lot of the proposed questions is that I hear is, how do you get started? And so one thing is that you have to kind of build your resume. And they go, resume? Yes, you must have a resume. You must build your resume.
No matter what you do, it's a resume. Yes, correct. especially in the model world. Well, all my friends said I'm pretty and I should model, so it's your privilege that I've decided to be a model. So what the heck? Why? It's everyone else's fault that I haven't made it as a model. Well, you didn't do your homework. There's more to it than that. Because it's great nowadays, everybody's a model. That's wonderful that it's open and that anyone can be a model. On the other hand, the downside is it's oversaturated and everyone's a model.
But there's, sort of what my friend would say, because she's a retired model herself and she started a modeling and acting boot camp. but she would often say that it's not about the individual themselves when they go in for a go-see. It's more or less what the designer is looking for, who is going to model their clothing, and it tends to
exactly.
And they're looking for who can model that designer's clothing the best and has the best walk and knows how to walk, knows how to pose, but they have to do their research on the designer. Is that so?
And you can't just walk in, because I mean, just with Fashion Week, New York, London, Milan, etc., I have 9 years under my belt. I still get turned down. I have 9 years of runway experience. It doesn't mean I can just walk in wherever I want and be like, well, here I am, and I've decided to grace your runway show, so I'm automatically hired. It doesn't work that way. You're right. It's their vision. It's not my vision of what I think they want. It's their vision. And you have to realize that there's always going to be somebody who is going to be more qualified than you. And just because I've been in the game 9 years doesn't mean I have the best walk in the whole universe. So, I mean, some people are better at things than other people are. So I guess you just have to keep it real and be realistic about who you are and what's going on. And like you said, look at it. I look at everything as the corporate world. I took my sales and marketing and my corporate background, my business background, and just use it to market and brand myself. And I look at it that way. And as long as I keep it realistic, it keeps you with not getting a big head. And it keeps you down to earth. And it keeps you realizing that, okay, I have to keep working on it, because there is going to be better out there. And there is going to be people that know somebody, so they're going to pull strings, and you're going to end up not getting the acting job or the modeling job because they know somebody that you don't know, or whatever the circumstances. But you are correct. You always have to be updating your resume and adding to your resume, no matter what type of job it is you do, whether you act or model or fitness model or whatever it is. Everybody, and a lot of these young ones don't look at it that way, or they don't want to put money into acting. Oh no, I should just be able to do lots of independent acting, and that'll build enough experience that I should get hired for paid roles and for union roles, and or do background all my life and be the next discovered actor out there. They haven't done their homework, or they would not say such things. But you can't convince. I'm in the game for acting. I'm going on 11 years. I still put money into my acting. Because you need to upgrade and update your skills. Things are so ever-changing. What you knew a year ago, 2 years ago, has changed now. So if you don't keep up to date and sharpen your craft, then you're going to be left in the dust.
They say that the average budget that a person going into acting for the very first time before they move out to LA usually starts around $10,000, or maybe a little bit more nowadays. I think probably, a couple of years earlier it used to be $10,000, but I think between a $10,000 $12,000 to really start to invest in themselves.
Exactly. Well, yeah, exactly. You have to put something in to get something out. So if you want to stand around and be a waiter and hope that you're discovered at the restaurant you work at, or you do background roles for 10 years and hope to be discovered, well then, good luck with that. I mean, I can't convince you differently, but it's not realistic. But you'd be amazed how many people still look at it that. Nope, I'm not putting a cent into it. Well, then I feel like you don't believe in yourself then. If you're not investing in yourself, why should anybody else invest in you?
this is quite true. And a lot of roles come out of, you know, taking the courses, taking the classes, taking a master class. You know, as such as, you know, Charles D. Clark, you know, he started his acting career. He took a master class. He took Bruce Nahan's master acting class. And Bruce became his mentor. And then from there, he took Kevin Spacey's master class. And, you know, from then on, he started to really develop his roles into, you know, developing as a method actor. And he started to progress. But they looked at it as something where it's a luxury to be an actor. And it's more of hard work and investment than it is luxury.
Well, because it's an oversaturated market. I mean, everyone's an actor, everyone's a model, right? Especially if you go to LA, etc. So you have to look at that too. When you have to invest in yourself, and you have to make the decision that's what you want to do, and you have to realize it's an oversaturated market. And as long as you're aware of that and you still want to step into it, then great. Like, I don't want to step on anyone's dreams, but I wish people would be a little more realistic and do their homework when it comes to the industries they're going to go into. Whether you're going into corporate industry or acting or modeling, you still need to do your homework and see if that's a good fit for you, and look at, weigh the pros and cons. Okay, well, does your personality suit the good, bad, and ugly of these industries? Is it something you can handle or not? And financially, can you afford to invest in yourself?
You know, that is something that a lot of that they should look into. Deep within themselves, you know, why intuitively do they want to start a career in that world of entertainment? Because it is similar to the business world, but it's also a different kind of world that they're stepping
into. Yeah, it's and you can't explain that to, if you're not in the acting or modeling industry, there's no way to explain how it's a different monster. You just have to see it for yourself.
Now, I hear that walking on the runway, that the reason, I've heard so many stories, but a friend of mine that's a model, that used to model, she mentioned that, that the reason why that the models are able to walk such a long time, because this is not just a couple of moments on the runway. You're walking the runway for hours sometimes. Is that right?
Are you talking, like, for practice, do you mean?
For a show.
What do you mean, for hours? I'm not understanding. Well, it depends how many outfits you have and what line you're in. So, but you're still not walking for hours. The only time you'd be walking for hours is if some of them are so choreographed that weeks up to the main show, you might do a couple times a week where you're practicing routines. That then it adds up to hours. But the show itself, even if they have a morning and an afternoon show, some split it into a couple shows, you're still not walking for hours. So I'm not understanding what I'd have to hear more of the context or talk to her about that, because I don't understand where she's coming from with that.
Well, what I mean is that, you know, of course, each model would have their time on the runway. So a show could last a little longer, but the models wouldn't walk for hours, but, you know, the show could run for a good time, depending on what type of show.
We're stuck there for hours, but we're not walking. Say there's a 6 p.m. show. We could be there at 6 a.m. in the morning, starting hair and makeup and a bit of rehearsals and last minute touch-ups with the designers, etc. So you can end up having an easy 12-hour day, for sure. But as for walking, no. So maybe that's what she meant. We can have 12, 14 hour days easily just for a couple hour show where we're only on the runway a couple times for a few minutes each time. But yeah, generally it's a 12 hour day from start to finish. Time you do hair, makeup, and rehearsal, and waiting for the show to start. That's true. They're long days that way, but the walking itself isn't hours.
Absolutely. I think that's what her meeting.
It's probably what she meant.
Because
I don't know what kind of runway show she was doing back in the day, but sure glad it's not like that anymore.
That would be.
I wear 6-inch heels on the runway because I'm a short model, so that would be horrible.
You know, thank goodness it's not for hours, only in a total increment of the time, but that would take place.
It can feel like hours.
You know, but which is true. She did explain that, you know, hair and makeup, and depending on how many models are backstage, it can be quite hectic. So there's not many visitors are allowed backstage, but only the press and, you know, the people that are. Artistically, you know, coordinating the actual show.
Exactly.
So, you know, I can just imagine.
It's long, hectic days for sure. Anywhere from 8 to 12 hour days, depending on the show, for sure. Yep.
But in a sense of what, if I may ask, were the toughest roles for you as per your acting career that you've portrayed, you know, as a character in a particular role?
My toughest role was musical theater because I have 2 left feet. I don't enjoy dancing whatsoever. So first time I ever did musical theater was Pirates of the Penzance. So one of the hardest ones you could ever do. So, and there was singing and dancing, and it was a few months of prepared singing. So I was singing opera and dancing and acting all at the same time on stage. And I come from film and TV side, so when you're thrown onto stage, it's a whole different monster. And then you add on to it, I am not a dancer by any means. So it was a very long few months, but it was fantastic. It was a great experience, but I would say that was my hardest one to do. Because generally you're a theater person or you're a film and television person. And I like the film and TV side of things, but I see why some of the greatest actors come from the theater side of things, because it pushes... It's a whole different ball game, and it really pulls out different sides of you. And if you mess up, there's no way to do another take. It's live night after night. So it was a fantastic experience, but it was a tough one for sure.
Yeah, theater is a, you know, they love to see theater on a resume. Theater is one of the main things to see. If they see theater on your resume, then they know that you've worked hard.
But yet my most fun, I do it part time, not all the time. I enjoy improv roles. So once a year or so I'll do murder mystery dinner theater, and I find that quite fun because you have a loose script, but you get to interact with your audience. Get to improv a lot of it and be a little bit over the top as the theater side is. So I do enjoy that more than I enjoy actual theater role.
I can see, you know, the differences could be, you know, one side could be more appealing than the other. To take a look at, as far as you know, if you're not quite a dancer, but you are a singer, you are an actress, you know, then that would be more appealing, you know, once
Yeah, exactly.
So,
but I like to try all sides of acting because I think it keeps your tools sharpened, and I always like to learn new things because life is so short. So I like to try all different, you name it, I think I've tried all different areas of acting throughout the years, and they were all enjoyable for different reasons.
It really, you know, wants me to kind of look at your showreel to see a lot of your work even more, coincidentally. I just love to see actors do their work. I just think it's an amazing thing to see, because you kind of wonder how did they progress to get into character like that, and to become who they've become in that character, which, you know, kind of brings me up to a question. Is there a way that you could describe your acting style, Ms. Milton?
How do I describe it? I'm very good at memorization, even as a kid. So memorizing scripts is the easiest part for me, whereas that's harder for other people. I really don't know. It really depends on the role. I'm at a loss to answer that for you. I think I just have my own style. I don't know.
I mean, you know,
I'll have to think about that one.
Well, as I talked to one actor, I believe it was Mr. Art Turman of Werewolf, of the movie that he portrayed with Mr. Suija, and he played a wolf, a wolf detective, and he did a lot of training when it came to the Meisner training, which kind of teaches you how to listen even more as an actor. And then, of course, there's the method acting, getting into putting yourself in that environment to become that character, what they're thinking, who they are, what they're thinking at that particular moment, that method acting. So there's so many different styles that they utilize.
I know there's so many. I think I'm a mixture of both, depending on the role. Because if you don't put yourself into that character, then how are you going to act? And I'm definitely not remember my first acting coach, her thing was, don't be an actor schmactor. So I'm definitely not an actor schmactor. Which is basically, actor schmactor. Overacting.
Oh, yes. So you want to be subtle, so to speak.
Like, look at daytime soap operas. I guess they would be kind of a form of actor schmactor.
I guess it's good to kind of know where you want to go. I know improvisation is more or less if maybe the director gives you something and it's kind of out of the blue, just to see what you would do with that material. Then improvisation would be good, because then that's a way you kind of can kind of work through, through a method of delivering the newest.
Because you never know what they're going to give you. I've been sent a script, got there to audition, and then they've thrown in improv, thinking, oh, okay, and messed up a lot of people. So I'm glad that I have done improv, because it didn't stress me out, and I wasn't like, oh no, what am I going to do now? So you should be prepared for everything, because you never know what's going to happen during that audition. Just because they sent you a script, they could decide to go totally into a cold read instead. Like, you never know what they're going to throw at you. Or they can decide, you know what, we're going to just improv this now and ignore the script that you've been working on for a few days. So, be prepared for everything, because you don't know what's going to happen.
I certainly agree. you never know. And then, of course, I love what you had described earlier. You know that sometimes this is who you know. You know they know you, and they can give you a great referral as well to kind of refer you and kind of know what you could fit, where you would fit, and kind of refer you just based on that. And
which is okay that way. But sometimes it's who you know, and the person isn't qualified. It's just because they know the right person in the industry. Like, I'm not above pulling strings to get where I need to be, but once I've gotten to that next step, I can still hold my own. They're not pulling strings, and I have no background or no experience whatsoever. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely, absolutely. You want to be, you know, you want to be able to kind of move in certain areas and be able to know that you can carry on what you've been inclined to, you know, to take the place of in certain aspects.
You just needed that person to get you to that point, to speak to the person you need to have the chance to prove yourself. I don't mind pulling strings that way. I'm not above that. I'm not above using my connections to get to where I need to be, but I still need to stand on my own 2 feet and prove myself after that point. But a lot of times in the industry, it doesn't work that way. It's just who you know, and that's all there is to it. And you don't have to have the experience or the background and be a good actor. It's just that you knew the right person who threw you into their movie. So... you never know. It's an interesting little monster.
Yes, but it's always good, you know, and I agree, it's always good to be prepared either way, you know, so that you're comfortable where you are in that instance. If I could ask, what was your first role as an actress?
My very first one was in Alberta. We're known for a show that I think it's in its 14th season, don't quote me, called Heartland. It's a family western. It's actually known in some parts of the U.S. as well. It's a pretty big deal. And my first role was on that as a background actress.
Wow. I think I've heard
and
of
it. And I was like, oh, I like that.
Heartland sounds like something where it's outdoors and it dealt with nature.
It is horses and family and it's a family show, and I believe it's in its 14th season, don't quote me on that. So yeah, that was my first one. It was, I think most of us start as background actors and move our way up from there.
I feel there's nothing wrong with starting out in the background, because you get to know set life, and you get to know, and it's a good place to kind of start the foundation of networking in that sense.
And whether you're interested in it or, oh, is this what, because your first thought is, oh, wow, how exciting, I'm an actor, and then you do background for about a year, and you're like, oh, okay, anyone really can be background. I think I need a little more. But some people are really happy doing background, and that's their thing. Good for them. I don't mean to say it's terrible or anything, but others are like, okay, well, I can't. I do some background every year, but I couldn't do it full time. I would be bored. It's not my thing. But some people, it is their thing, and that's great. That's what they do full time. They enjoy it. But I need a little more challenge than that, I guess. And I think once you get speaking roles, it's really hard to... you feel like you're stepping backwards when you do background work.
It's good to kind of test the waters in this sense, where you, if you want to progress, mm-hmm. or if you're fine where you are, or is this something that, you know, it's for the meantime to see where you want to go, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, it's a good, because you have to start somewhere. I'm sure there's some people who studied and put money in and started with a speaking role and never did background in their life. But realistically, 9 times out of 10, that's where people start in the industry and work their way up.
This is true. There's even a lot of A-list actors who started, you know, just taking smaller roles because their passion was, you know, to really learn the essence of acting in a sense, and to grow from that, those experiences where it actually fueled their intent more into the passion of where they are now, just beginning in small
roles. And then there's the downside of it, because people will look at your resume, and if you're oversaturated with background, they automatically decide that you couldn't do speaking roles. So too much background, casting directors look at that as a bad thing as well. So yeah, it's always a balancing act in this industry. Can't have too much of one thing and can't have too much of another thing. And yeah, it's always a balancing act too for people above your head looking at your resume. So, which you learn as you're in it, when you're in the game longer, you learn those things as well.
This is true. I would assume you're SAG accredited. I'm just assuming that since you are a veteran as an actress in the acting field.
Yeah, I'm not SAG, but ACTRA, yes.
What will be the biggest audience you have ever performed in front of, Mrs. Milton?
Biggest audience. I would have to say it would be doing musical theater. And on the modeling side, it would be New York Fashion Week.
Fashion Week is very intense.
Any Fashion Week is intense. Because as years go by, it builds further. New York, London, Milan, Paris, Scotland, Atlanta, Dubai, they all have Fashion Weeks now. So every year it just builds more. There's more Fashion Weeks. Building. But New York is the most intense. New York's just an intense city, and it's the city of fashion, so of course it's the most intense.
Now, in that world of the fashion world, I hear that it's not very good. It's not good to have B-lister runways on your resume. B-listers such as kind of paid to play. Will you agree, Ms. Milton?
If you're newer in the modeling world, yes, because it's just like the acting side, right? Oh, look, you have all background work, so therefore I'm going to assume you're not capable of getting speaking roles. Oh, look, you have all B-lister modeling work, so therefore I'm just going to assume you're not capable of A-list modeling, which is ridiculous, but that's how the world goes, yes. I think it's starting to get better, though, because there's so many branches off the main shows now. And because of the anti-bullying and non-body shaming, etc., I think they're starting to look at the branches a little in a better light now. Because there'll be New York Fashion Week, and then the same time as New York Fashion Week, they'll have smaller shows that are still part of New York Fashion Week. So the B-list shows, I guess you'd call them. But I think people aren't looking at them as a negative like they did even a year ago, because things are changing, are ever changing so much in the modeling industry that they have to be careful how they look at things, and things are becoming better. I mean, pl- plus size modeling wasn't a thing. Now it's huge in the industry. And Victoria's Secret, they've canceled their shows now because the world has found that they're not realistic about the women's sizes. So things are so ever changing that right now I agree with what you're saying, but the way things are changing a month from now, that could be different. And a lot of them are starting to, they used to only hire for fashion weeks. Well, we won't hire outside of modeling agencies. That's even changed now, and they will take non-signed models. So things are starting to open up for people. So right now I agree with that, but again, it's starting to change. So yes and no on that point, I guess. It depends who's looking at it.
No, you...
Right? There's the end result. It depends which director of which show is looking at it. And it depends what designers are involved. Because I'm noticing designers are starting to be more open-minded and going after different shapes and sizes of models as well. My girlfriend here, New York Fashion Week, not one of the B shows, she does plus size, and they said, okay, we'll give you models that are size 8. And she pushed and pushed. She said, well, how does that help? Because my sizes start at 14. I want my models to be size 14, not size 8, because why am I representing size 8 on the New York Fashion Week when my designs are 14 and over? And she pushed for it, and they agreed. Whereas a year ago, I don't think New York Fashion Week would have even entertained the idea. So things are starting to change a lot. And good for her. I'm glad she stood her ground on that, because women up to size 14 can generally find nice dresses. But once you're size 14 and larger, which is an average size of women nowadays, where do they find clothes? And they're the ones with the money. And things are changing. Before, they only had models up to 18 or 21 years old. Now they're realizing on Fashion Week, well, the women that have the money are the ones that are working and successful and have a career. They're 25 over. They're not under 25 buying the clothes. So I think they're starting to go more towards what society looks for and less what the old way of thinking was. We're starting to get there, but we'll see. Again, fashion changes. Who knows what's going to happen next year? Who's going to be the it girl next year?
This is very true. as we look into it, there was an appeal that brought, the world, the reality series of America's Next Top Model. And a lot of, there were some models that had mixed reviews that said that their career didn't begin after the show. It began when they started to project themselves further. But from my perspective, I feel that, it was more of a learning experience for them to be on that particular reality series, because they were being taught certain things.
And it would depend, what did they do with it after the show? Did they figure, oh, that's fame, and wondered why their phone wasn't ringing off the hook? Or did they take that show, add it to their resume, and use that as a name drop to move forward? So it really depends, what did these girls do with the ones that probably were successful after that show? Used it in the right way to market themselves and propel themselves forward. The girls that relied on, oh, I was on America's Next Top Model, I should just automatically propel, they're probably the ones that are flipping burgers or whatever, because they didn't do anything with it. They didn't look at the business side of it, and they didn't look into how can I use that show to propel me forward.
That is very insightful, because no matter what avenue this branch that they've come from, you know, from stemming from the show. It really, I guess it all depends on that individual, what they can do with such a tool.
It really does, because I started in the industry, modeling industry, over 10 years ago, where they weren't open like they are now. And I had every barrier you can think of. I have a 9-inch scar around my left thigh. I'm only 5'6". I'm a size 8 because I bodybuild. The list goes on, and that didn't stop me. And I propelled myself forward and do fashion weeks at 5'6" and size 8. So it really depends on your determination and your push and your drive. And again, if you don't believe in yourself, why should anybody else, right? So it has, and social media makes life easier too, because back in the day, if you wanted to work in the U.S. as a model, you had to have 2 publications to apply, but you weren't allowed to go to the U.S. and shoot and be in 2 U.S. publications to apply for your working visa. So it was like, well, what the hell? How do I get around that? Well, now we have web-based magazines, so just about any girl can be published in a magazine now internationally. So things have changed so much now that it's made it easier to propel your modeling or acting career. With social media, etc., it makes life a lot easier, where you don't have to travel around and do go-sees, etc., like you did back in the day. You used to have to hop a plane and come see people in real time. Now, they'll accept Skype interviews, etc. So, things are getting easier for girls to make it further in the acting world and the modeling world. Because same with acting, you'd have to hop a plane and go audition. And now self-tapes are pretty much the main thing, that the main go-to now is self-tapes and or Skype, etc. So we have a lot more tools at hand to propel ourselves further.
Going into the last minute, the last couple of minutes in our session, you have been just an amazing special guest, Miss Middleton, Miss Nikki Middleton, and I must have you back on my show so that our listeners can keep updated with you, because you do so much in the industry, and you're so well versed and you're so knowledgeable as well. Stunt person, you're well educated in those sense. It's such a sweet individual as well. So glad I had you on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, Ms. Milton. Where can the listeners find you out there and find your work?
I'm on Facebook under Nikki Middleton. So Nikki Middleton. I'm on Facebook. Anybody can see that. That's my main business page. Instagram is the opposite. It's Middleton, so Middleton Nikki. 1K. People always want to put 2Ks in it. That's my Instagram. And IMDb is Nikki Middleton, Middleton. So you can find me on one of those 3 or all 3. So I'm pretty easily searchable, and those are the 3 main ones to snoop and see what I'm up to next. Half the time, I don't know what I'm up to next.
Radio and TV, entertainment, AM, FM, podcast show, with Yolanda Nolly. Nolly.
Are you a talent trying to make it in the world of entertainment? The way to do that is through social media. But how? With the ebook, How to Profit in Entertainment, Social Media Guide from author Yolanda Nolly. This incredible book will teach you how to brand yourself and how to earn profits using social media and other entertainment media platforms. The entertainment agencies will be offering you high-paying jobs. How to Profit in Entertainment, Social Media Guide. Order your copy today on Amazon and everywhere else.
Chapter 1. How to Rise to the Top When Everybody There Is Already. Think you've got talent? You're not alone. The power of the internet, YouTube, and reality television has created a big pool of famous and not so famous people. So how do you rise to the top in your career, especially as an actor or actress in Hollywood, when it seems so crowded above? These three tips will help you make the moves to superstardom and stretch your 15 minutes of fame as a movie star into an hour. Get trained. What separates the actors from the imitators? Their respect for the craft of acting. Before you spend money on headshots, find the best acting, singing, and dancing classes in your area, and invest in your career. The most talented people in the business continually train with acting coaches to prepare for roles. They don't take their gift for granted. It is quite possible to have the innate talent for a particular art, but the successful entertainers who continue to work in the entertainment industry have developed their art over time. Acquire multiple skills. Become a Jack or Jill of all trades. The stars of the future will write, produce, and direct their own projects. Don't get lost by having only one skill that can make you money. Become an actor, director, writer, producer, and even a model. Can't write? Collaborate with a young filmmaker who needs an actor or fresh new face for his or her projects. The top money makers in show business look for ways to increase their market share and find opportunities to promote their multiple skills. You must diversify your talent to stay relevant. Create your own products. Be a trendsetter. Want to be the next Berry Gordy, Steven Spielberg, Mark Burnett, or Oprah Winfrey? Create an amazing product. Become an expert in your field. But you can't be a trend follower. You must be a trend setter. Don't better the worst product. Better the best. Gordy is a musical genius. Spielberg is a film mastermind. Mark Burnett is the whiz kid of reality TV. Oprah is a successful talk show maven and the new product's best girlfriend. Find a niche, create products, and sell. But the products you create must be phenomenal, not average, not mediocre. Think like the greats. Improve upon their successes. Create amazing products that your audience can't live without. Famous people of the future are increasing their knowledge, creating products, and diversifying their talents. Some of these innovators are stealing the thunder from established stars that are still following the old rules found in the star-making playbook. Use my suggestions to stay ahead of the next group of reality stars and home video masterminds. If not, you might disappear before you even enter the game. Chapter 2. Finding ways to make money using your artistic. Whether you have great musical talent, the ability to paint, or have outstanding writing prowess, you may be able to find ways to make money by using your talent. You certainly should use these skills to your advantage and not let them become wasted on just a recreational hobby. Musicians have so many different venues to go out and sell their talent, while a real, serious artist might still be able to sell their work if they can get their work exposed to the public eye. Writers often have a tough time trying to get their work published, but have outlets like short story and freelance opportunities as well to make a buck. While the most common stumbling block for an artist to find ways to make money is often their hardline stance on not wanting to be a sellout and wanting to keep their trade pure, this will often keep the artist very poor until they are dead. The smart ones will get out in the marketplace and try and get their art sold to as many people as they can. Quite a lot of musicians will work as cover bands or do things like weddings and school proms to make a buck. And writers will sell their work writing things they have little interest in just to gain notoriety and bring in the cash as well. This is often the price an artist has to pay before they are established in their venue of choice. If you are someone who has a talent, you may want to start looking for ways to make money from that talent, even if it is a weekend gig just doing kids' birthday parties as a juggling cowboy or singing with a Beatles cover band. It will allow you to make some money doing what you are good at and potentially open some doors for you to expand off of that talent. No matter what it is you ultimately want to do with your life, letting your artistic skills find ways to make money for you cannot hurt. You never know how far your talent may take you these days, as the avenues to exposure on a grand scale are more plentiful than they used to be. From YouTube to American Idol, there are many roads to success these days. The best thing you can do is try your hand at as many paths as possible and see where it leads. If it never works out for you, so be it. You can return to your boring 9-to-5 day job and keep singing on the weekends. Chapter 3. How to make money from your crafts and art. If you are someone who enjoys putting together artistic projects, you can turn this into an opportunity to make extra money online. Whether you paint, make jewelry, take photographs, or craft other pieces of artwork together, you can turn this into a money-making activity. People are often willing to pay for different artworks which they enjoy, and as long as your works actually have artistic merit, you will have a good chance at making money from them. There are a few different websites available which can help you sell crafts and other pieces of art that you may have put together. By running searches and looking through some of the listings offered, you may be able to determine which website your pieces will fit into best. Taking the time to do your research will help you make extra money online, as you will know the best places to put your talents without wasting your time. Should you start to make extra money online through your art projects, you will only be inspired to spend more time working on them. This will serve two purposes in your life. Not only will you be bringing in some extra cash, which always helps, but you will also be able to spend time doing something that you genuinely love. This goal, which started out simply as a way to make extra money online, will turn into a great chance for you to develop your talents and skills and grow as an artist. It is definitely an opportunity which should be explored by anyone who is serious about developing their talents. Chapter 4. The right way to use YouTube to promote you. When we think of social media, YouTube is not really at the top of the list in the mind of an entrepreneur. It is less about social interaction and more of a good place to go for some distraction. This might be the case, but that doesn't mean it cannot be an integral part of marketing your brand online as an entertainer. What makes YouTube a social site is how easy it is for users to share the content with other people, as well as the ability to leave comments and subscribe to the channels they like. It is another way for a brand to reach its target audience online and grow its reputation as an industry leader. YouTube has the lowest average bounce rate of all the social networks. It is the continuous engagement from users that make it a channel that holds onto attention better than most. People are able to simply watch content instead of scroll and read. Another thing to consider is just how enormous YouTube's reach is. Over 1 billion unique visitors. That is a huge market that is largely untapped by so many businesses today. YouTube is a great channel for brands of all sizes in the entertainment world. Even for bloggers who are eager to grow their readership and build up their personal brand, can take advantage of the simple platform by uploading videos. So, as a brand, what should you be doing to get the most of all that YouTube can offer? First, fill out your profile completely. It is the same on every social network. You don't want to leave holes. Make sure that you are giving as much information about yourself as possible. Visitors want to see your info when they click on your profile, so don't leave them disappointed. Then, give your channel a good description. The channel description is like an introduction letter. It lets people know who you are and what they can expect when they watch your videos. This doesn't have to be a great work of literature. Simply a brief statement about who you are, what types of videos you will be posting, and how often. Be sure to use your keywords in your description to make your channel easier to find through a user search. Be sure to include links. On your About page, it is always a good idea to include the links to your other social sites, like Twitter and Facebook, plus a direct link to your website or blog. This is a good way to get more people engaging with your brand outside of YouTube and build your fan base. Give your page some love. You can personalize your channel art in YouTube by adding a profile picture. Make sure that it is something reflective of your brand by using your logo, colors, and even your own picture. Stay active. You don't want people visiting your page and only finding a few videos that you posted at the dawn of time. Always create new videos to post to your channel. Interact with your followers by responding to any comments that they leave. Send out a thank you when they subscribe. You can see anything being discussed on your channel under the Discussion tab. The more active you are with your channel, the bigger your audience is going to get. It is also a good idea to embed your videos into blog posts, status updates on social media, or on your website. This is a good way for you to add channel subscribers from those who are already following you elsewhere. YouTube is a key part of any marketing strategy. Are you using it for your brand?